Welcome to the Genius Vet Show for veterinary practice owners and industry pros. At Genius Vets, it's our mission to help veterinary practices thrive, and this webinar and podcast supports that mission by giving a platform to the best and brightest minds in the veterinary industry, where we identify challenges facing veterinary practices today, and discussing ideas, insights, and solutions that practice owners need to know about. If you like today's show, that's something we'd love to know. Feel free to send an email to genius@geniusvets.com. And make sure to check out the wealth of resources available to veterinary practices at geniusvets.com/pro. That's geniusvets.com/pro. Now, without any further ado, let's dive into today's show. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Genius Vet Show for veterinary practice owners and industry pros. I'm your host, David Hall, and today our guest is AVMA President Dr. Rena Carlson. We're going to be discussing Dr. Carlson's amazing career. We'll be discussing the trends, the threats, and the opportunities facing practice ownership today. And I hope that we'll be providing some inspiration along the way. Allow me just a moment to tell you a little bit about our distinguished guest. Now, Dr. Rena Carlson's career has spanned more than 30 years, including clinical work, practice ownership, university accreditation, and academic research. Now, in addition to owning a private practice, which she grew to six doctors, Dr. Carlson also was the attending veterinarian at Idaho State University Animal Care Facility for 28 years. In 2014, she was elected to serve on the AVMA Board of Directors as District 11 Director. And in her last 2 years on the AVMA Board of Directors, she served on the Board of Governors as Vice Chair and Chair. Dr. Carlson is currently the president of the AVMA. And so we're just truly thrilled that she's able to join us here today on the Genius Vet Show. Dr. Carlson, thank you so much.
Thanks, David. It's really awesome to be here and talk about some of the things that are super important to me and hopefully share with others ways that, you know, I found to enjoy my career and find a thriving environment for me.
You know, I mean, I don't think of myself as an industry outsider anymore, but certainly 8 years ago when I came into this industry, I mean, it's taken a lot to really understand the landscape, and I've, you know, I've done everything I can to understand all the organizations, the people who are really leading things and the various perspectives. But what's really helped me along the way is my partner, Dr. Drake. She has an amazing perspective, having such a long career and all of this stuff. And one thing with Dr. Drake is she definitely will look around and you know, look at what different organizations or whatnot, and has a strong opinion about whether they're going right direction, wrong direction, and who she really thinks is doing great. And this is, I give all credit to Dr. Drake for her pointing me in your direction and just going, that is a person who is really sharing serious opinions that everybody needs to hear. And she has just been so heavy with praise, having read articles you've been putting out at least over the last year. You know, really effusive in the praise for all that you've been doing. So,
well, thank you for that. You know, we all kind of find our spot, and all of this, when it comes to being in private practice and practice ownership, it truly gave me so much flexibility in my career. It gave me an opportunity to shape how I wanted that to look. It gave me the opportunity to surround myself with amazing team members. And, you know, that right there is what really drives me, is to surround myself with the people that really help create and drive where we want to go. And again, that's all about helping clients and helping pets, right? Or animals in general.
Yeah, but I mean, you have something special that, okay, so let me put it this way. So many veterinarians, they get out of school and they just want to practice veterinary medicine, right? And that's a lot. There's a lot day in, day out. I mean, so many professionals throughout the industry pour themselves into this, and they're facing burnout from going in and being, you know, dedicated, you know, medical professionals and helping, you know, dogs and cats. Then you got some very ambitious souls who decide to take on all the challenges of practice ownership. And there's a lot there. You start out, you're wearing 85 different hats, and you got to run the whole thing. And on top of, you know, being a practicing doctor and everything. So which you did, but on top of all of that, you managed consistently throughout your career to find time and energy to give back as a mentor, as a committee member, as a board member, and now the president of the AVMA. So, you know, I mean, to so many people, just one of those things would be overwhelming, yet you've managed to tackle them all. So here's what I'd like to ask. I'd like to ask if you'd mind sharing just some insight on in your inspiration, or what I think is probably more about like your perspective that's allowed you to take on all those things and to accomplish what you've accomplished without just, I mean, unless you live on you know, this level 10 burnout, but you keep going. It seems like you've been able to do that without burning out. How do you do it?
So for me, you know, I think I learned early on how important connections outside of my own practice were, and how much those connections can help me. So let's be honest, a lot of what we do is driven selfishly, right? What can I do that's going to help me and my team? And when I would go out to different association meetings and I would meet other veterinarians, I always looked at those people, because early in my career, of course, they were the more experienced veterinarians. And I'd look at them and wonder, you know, how did they get where they are? How can I be more like them? I really like this person's style. How can I, you know, emulate that? And the more I learned and connected with other veterinarians and very successful veterinarians, it really helped me. And so that drives you and inspires you to want to meet more people and look at things in a whole different way. The other thing is, you know, I started learning that people in regulatory environments are making decisions for my practice every day. So we would look at the state legislature and they were changing our practice act, and that would affect me on a daily basis. And I really felt like I wanted to be part of that decision. I wanted to be at the table, at least talking about it. You know, so that was another big driver for me to be able to say, we need veterinarians at the table talking about these issues, because people outside of the profession are making decisions, well-meaning people, but they're making decisions perhaps without veterinary input. So that was a big driver for me to get involved in organized veterinary medicine. And all of that I would bring home, and I thought made us stronger back with my team. You would learn all kinds of things about leadership and, you know, how do we provide medicine better? How do we communicate with our clients better? How do we find those things to offer our clients to facilitate care for their animals and help them treat their animals? So it kind of all feeds on itself for me about getting out there, meeting people, connecting with people, and how that helps me bring all that stuff back home and do a better job at home and help my team. So I don't know if that makes any sense or not.
No, really, it really does.
It's a cycle of learning and connecting and trying to do better.
Yeah, I think it really makes a ton of sense on, you know, shedding some light into the inspiration, into the motivations and benefits that you saw for it. I think that I guarantee that we've got some practice owners that are listening right now. And they're going, I get it. I get it. It's inspiring. You want to get to stay, and I get what you get back. But how do you get out of the practice with enough time to do that when they can't find, you know, time in the day for something? Legitimately, how do you just start out being able, you know, you get it down and after a while, and obviously your team has to pick up a lot of slack and they have to become aware of how to keep it running when you're not there. And that's so important. I mean, one of my mentors, Roland Frazier, who I suggest to every business owner that they follow Roland Frazier, he's brilliant. But one of the things that I've been picking up, it's taken me years to learn and really understand, but if I first heard him say it years ago, business ownership is not on the org chart. Business ownership is, you know, works above the business. So you have to, all the hats you're wearing as a business owner, your job is to get other people wearing them. But how did you go initially? How'd you get yourself enough time and organization so that you could just get out and start participating in those communities in that way?
You know, it's a personal commitment. I always say that if you really want something, you'll find the time for it. So Boy, I don't know that I have an exact answer of how I found the time, but I was committed to that. And when you get that positive feedback, you come back to your practice and you utilize some of the skills you've learned, you instill that in your team. You see your team thrive. That motivates you to work harder and even do better for them. It's kind of like, your family. I know people say there's positive and negatives of talking about your work, your team at work as your family, but really it's about building those relationships. And when they thrive, that just motivates me to do better. So, you find the time. The other thing, being the practice owner, I got to make those decisions and say, okay, I'm going to work really hard right here so that I can block out this time over here. And I know that when I get back, I'm going to have to pick up some slack as well. But you just make that time if you really want to do something. In my world anyway, you make the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You're so right. Just decide what it's going to be and do it. When I hear people say, particularly business owners, like, I'm too busy. I couldn't possibly do that. I don't have the time. I love that you said, I mean, if you really want to do it, you can do it. You can make it happen. We all decide what we're going to do spending our time, even if we have commitments. If you get in a car accident, you're going to find an extra 8 hours that week to go deal with the service shop and to deal with the insurance and to deal with this because you have to. You have the time. It's just what you're going to dedicate to using it for. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah. And also, I feel like if you've told yourself, I don't have the time to do that, you've already fulfilled your prophecy. That will happen. You won't have the time, right? So I always see myself doing something, picture what that looks like, plan out how that might be. What can I do to make that happen? And if I really want to, I never say, well, I'll never have the time or I don't have the time. I just don't tell myself that.
Yeah, you're manifesting. You're saying, this is what it's like. This is what it feels like. This is what it's going to be like when as I'm doing this thing, and that's what I'm doing now. I become that. That's right. It's funny because so many people when they ask for something, when they want something, and they kind of whether they meditate or pray on it or whatever it might be, it's really reinforcing something that they don't have it now. What they're practicing is a feeling of wanting the thing that they don't have, as opposed to, this is what it's like, and I'm going to live in this, and I'm going to step in, and I'm going to do it. Like I am this now. It sounds like you very much do that, whether you would call it manifesting or not. Like that's a silly thing, but anyway. And the other thing I wanted to thank you for, I want to thank you so much for having participated in our WBC event. For anybody out there that didn't know, at WBC for the past few years, Genius Vets, we've put on produced the Veterinary Practice Ownership Symposium. And this year, Dr. Carlson was kind enough to join our panel discussion along with the presidents of AHA, VMG, TBC, Paul Consulting. We had just this amazing star-studded ensemble on stage. And what we were talking about was, we recently at Genius Vets, we put out this survey to practice owners, top performing practice owners nationwide, and got a lot of feedback from practice owners. There's three simple questions, and that's what I would like to kind of focus on here today, is go over and get your perspective on these questions. The three questions were, what do you think the trends are that are facing veterinary practice ownership in 2024? And then the second question was about the threats facing ownership in 24, and the last was the opportunities. So if we can, I'd love to just spend a few minutes and just kind of use this as an open discussion from your very unique perspective, not only as a practice owner and all that you've done through academia, but also being at the top of one of the organizations that just oversees everything, and the entire industry kind of hinges on the AVMA. From that unique perspective, what do you think the trends are that are affecting practice ownership right now?
Well, I think some of the exciting trends are the continued strong demand for veterinary services, and people are actually interested in higher level of service for their pets right now, particularly pets. So that creates just so many opportunities. The public wants good veterinary care. Another part of the trend is certainly technology. There is so much in technology that not only do consumers know about, they're seeking that. And it can really help us do a better job if we will embrace that technology and work to make sure we're using that technology in the right way in order to provide quality and best care for animals. So I think that not only the strong demand for veterinary services and technology, I think there's just a ton of opportunities. Another trend that I'm really excited about is I just got back from SABMA Symposium. We have the most energetic, enthusiastic, smart students coming up the pipeline. They want a great career in veterinary medicine. They're motivated, they're smart. And so I think it's important that we really look at that to help provide a really good environment for them to thrive in veterinary medicine moving forward. Whether that's there's all kinds of jobs available, whether that's independent practices and opportunities for ownership, whether an individual might be happier and thrive better in a corporate situation. I just think there's so many opportunities. When I got out of school, there were much more limited opportunities of practice models and where you went to work. So really another trend is just the wide variety of opportunities for our future veterinarians.
I love that. There's some awesome things in there that I'd love to jump in and unpack a little bit. For instance, just going back to your first point, strong demand and a higher level of service. And I think that those multiple levels in there, because the strong demand, I mean, we definitely, COVID, we saw a massive spike. And yes, over the past year, across the country, on average, the number of invoices were down year over year. But that's also following like record crazy spikes of, you know, of demand. So overall, demand is still strong. And we've, you know, the most recent stat that I saw, and I can't quote exactly where I saw this, some article I was reading somewhere, estimated something around 70% of pet owners don't actually even go to the vet like on a regular basis, you know, at all. So it just seems like overall, there's a lot of education necessary there. I know that there's a lot of one thing, unfortunately, that happened through COVID, and it's just generally a difficult trend in our world today, is there's so much information. Everybody has a loud megaphone called the internet, and anybody anywhere can be blogging, writing, sharing their dumb opinions on social, whatever it is. And people are losing sight of who professionals really are. And there's more trends than there ever has been to question actual experts and question facts and come up with, you know, alternative ideas and, you know, whatever. So I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of education that needs to be done for the general public to help them really understand that veterinarians are not, they're the opposite from somebody who's just trying to like take your money and earn money. They're, you know, these are caring, brilliant professionals who really have the pet's, you know, health as their number one priority. And I think with that education, that just the overall veterinary market can grow so much from more pet owners just kind of leaning in and utilizing veterinary services. There's also the high end stuff that you mentioned, the higher level of service. Like we live in a world where there's luxury everything. Everybody wants luxury, you know, every category of everything. And don't get me wrong, there's still people that are the coupon cutters and want that, you know, stuff as well. But what do you think on those two topics as far as like expanding, you know, the overall reach of veterinary care into these households that aren't currently getting it and the opportunity to deliver this at a higher service luxury? What do you talk a little bit more about those?
That's a good point, because there are a ton of animals out there that don't receive the care that we would like to give them. And so it's definitely an untapped, you know, area that we need to reach into and meet them where they're at. I think that as a profession or a lot of different industries, you know, just expect the consumer to come to us. And I feel like that's where in today's world, I think it's more important that we go and find where they are. If someone is, say, for instance, hesitant about vaccines, how can we educate them and help them make the right decision? Like you said, there's so many levels of what people have the resources to afford, all the way down to they really don't have those resources. So if you've been around as long as I have, when we lived through the dot-com burst or bubble or whatever, the 90s, and then the 2008, you know, we still were out there providing veterinary care. We just had to adjust to what people could afford at the time, or what they are willing to do, or what they can do. So I think as veterinarians, we really need to meet the client where they're at and provide the level of care that is appropriate and do the best we can for the animal. Because again, there's a whole population of people that not only don't even seek care. How do we reach that population? Again, like you said, through education. How there's a population that are seeking care, but they either can't afford it, or they stay away because of, you know, some kind of barrier. You know, how do we reach that population? And then, of course, through our specialty services and all the advanced care, you know, there's a population of people that, you know, truly are going to be able to and want to and willing to go to that higher level of care. So again, there is a whole spectrum of ability and places where we as veterinarians need to reach those animal owners and make sure that veterinary care is a viable option at whatever level, you know, they're able to afford. And as that, you know, demand goes up, the cost goes up. And so we really do start losing some of those people to even get veterinary care. We're going to see the demand drop. Like you've said, we're seeing visits down because, and in part because cost is going up. So there's so many niches that we can, as veterinarians, find a way to get that care, do what we love to do, provide care, help people and their animals, and still make a living at it. In my opinion, I think there's all kinds of different niches that we can find to be able to provide that care.
Yeah, I agree with you so much. And what you were saying about, you know, needing to meet people where they're at, I mean, that's so much of what I talk about when I go out and I'm speaking at different events, whether they're VMG events or conferences and whatnot. One of the central themes that I generally am trying to convey to vets is that, you know, the overall role of the veterinarian has changed because of the shift in the dynamics just of us as consumers in society. 30 years ago, if somebody had a problem with, you know, with pet care, with their pet, they didn't go down to the library and check out a book. You know, they called a veterinarian and asked a question. They didn't go do the research. But today, because we all have the internet in the palm of our hands, everybody does the research. Everybody has a question and we immediately go to Google. We immediately ask Siri or Alexa. We immediately go to search engines. And those are just bringing back information that's online. And so this role of where the veterinarian needs to step into being that educator and that information resource, so that those pet owners who are with the pet all the time are actually getting good information that came from a veterinarian, and that slowly turns them into good veterinary clients. You know, it's not like they're going to go start practicing medicine at home. They're not right. Going to, you know.
And part of that is, you know, building that relationship. You know, I hear so often how frustrated we get when someone has done a really extensive Google search on what's happening and they come to me with all this information. I'm not unhappy with that. I'm like, oh, good. You're really informed here. And you know, this is a great source and you're right. I think it really leads to very pretty well-informed people. Yes, there's all kinds of places online that you're going to get, you know, really crappy information or misleading information. But if you can build that relationship with a person, they're much more likely to really hear you and start taking your advice to heart. And so partly I like little sayings every day to kind of help keep my focus in the right place. And one of those is always to just remember, seek to understand. I need to go in first seeking to understand before I start trying to, you know, give everybody all my fabulous information. I need to seek to understand where they're at. And then we can communicate a little bit. And I want them to listen to me. I want them to take what I have to say to heart. And I need to build that relationship with them before they'll be open to listening. And then, you know, then it's kind of up to them whether they, you know, where they want to go with that information. But I feel like building that relationship seek to understand where they're at, why they have those beliefs, and then have a conversation around, you know, what are some other things we can think about?
Yeah, such good advice. Such good advice. Two ears, one mouth, and we use them accordingly, right? Like start off with listening.
Hopefully, I try to do that.
I love it. You had also mentioned technology. I do want to touch on that. You know, we could go 100 different ways, and I don't want to, you know, I do want to get to the threats and opportunities as well. But, you know, when you said technologies, is there anything in particular that kind of jumps to mind for you that you know, what are advocating that people, you know, kind of embrace from a technology standpoint?
Well, the big one that's always out there is telemedicine, of course, and we really need to be careful, I think, with telemedicine. And as veterinarians, all the surveys of veterinarians, we all believe that that in-person exam is critical, you know, for us to be able to get an accurate diagnosis, get a good treatment plan, build that relationship with the client, understand the whole situation, use the tools we have, you know, our eyes, our ears, our hands, all of those tools we have to get that best diagnosis. So telemedicine is another tool for us to use. And when you talk about the regulatory environment, that in-person VCPR, I think, is just really critical to be able to help veterinarians, you know, do our job to the best of our ability. Nice. Telemedicine is a tool. It's simply another tool for us to reach people. And with our changing society and how we are all looking for a button to click to get the information we want, I think that that's another way for us to be able to reach clients with teletriage, with follow-up, all kinds of things we can do with telehealth. Beyond that, I think the technology world is just fascinating to me because, I mean, some of the things that I see today, like the AI record-keeping systems, helping with inventory, helping with appointment management, HR, diagnostics, cytology, pathology, you know, just I can't even begin to think of the endless opportunities. I think of these things and I'm like, oh my gosh, if I had this 20 years ago, would be life changing. So, and it can be overwhelming as well. I think that's one of the things that it paralyzes us because there's so much, you don't necessarily know where to go, right? And that's where having that time to really figure out where are the pain points in my life right now? Where are the pain points for my team? How can I make a more seamless, better experience for my client and really prioritize what is that right now? Record keeping for my team. For me personally, doing all the fancy AI stuff with record keeping, life changing. We spend hours typing up records. You know, start with that. If that's what, you know, really resonates or if that's really a pain point, start with some of those things. Really learn them. Your team has to embrace it. The team has to make a commitment. They have to be invested in it as well. And so I think, you know, starting to just pick a few things that really would make the most impact in your practice is so important because then once you start, oh my gosh, look how great things are now that we've incorporated this technology. Now everybody's going to be eager, hopefully, to find the next one. And your clients are going to go, oh my gosh, that making that appointment was so easy. I loved it. Or, you know, I think that it can snowball once you start seeing the benefit and seeing your team thrive with some of the technology that can really help us.
Yeah, I totally agree. Being somebody who comes from a tech industry and has always been a tech guy, you know, the only caution flag that I like to wave is before hopping in to avoid shiny object syndrome, to avoid going down, because there's so many tech ideas out there that are just bad. They're just there or they're not ready yet. No, those are some of the biggest wasters is the ones where you're like, there's a lot of promise here and you're willing to chase that way down the road to learn that like, it's just not capable right now of delivering on the promise, you know? But I mean, with AI backed things, it is moving so much faster than just about anybody understands. It's moving so fast and how quickly it's improving and the capabilities and all of that. But I think the other thing is before you really invest a lot of time in going in and systems and additional people and the training and all of that, like really just super clearly understanding what are the benefits and doing that cost benefit analysis and going like, okay, if this works, it's really worth it. And is there evidence that it works? Others, it's working for others, then hop on in, because it really can. I mean, if that benefit is, you know, shaving hours off a day of typing stuff in, bonus. That is awesome. Get your time back, right?
And find out what really is the sticky points for your team. That could be different for everybody, right? I mean, depending on your practice, you know, that's where I would start. What is it that's the sticky point or the challenge or what's driving my team crazy? Adding more time to our day, adding more frustration, and what piece of technology might be out there, and then investigate, you know, is this really ready for prime time? Is it something that can help? And then getting the whole team involved. You know, I made the mistake, of course, of, you know, I'd go to a conference or go to something and, oh, this is the best thing since sliced bread. And I'd come home and everybody else is just like, well, this is really stupid. This isn't helping.
That's so, me. I do that all the time. I come out, no, it's going to be awesome. And, you know, it's not quite yet, but that's all right.
Yeah, the team just doesn't necessarily get behind it. So, I think those need to be, you know, kind of team decisions and help understand. Because what might be really frustrating me is not a big deal to everybody else. So what right. is frustrating everybody and how do we improve that and help that?
Yeah, it's motivations. Really good. Well, so let's shift gears now. So those were the trends you think and that you're excited about. Some definitely some good trends there that you identified. What are the threats that you think are, you know, that practice owners should know about, be wary of, be, you know, planning to go around or whatever? What are the threats we're facing practice ownership right now?
I think the biggest threat is just ignoring how the world is changing. You know, we can't just sit here and say, I'm just going to practice the way I always have. And that's okay. You may just plug along and be as happy as you want to be. But if you really want to grow and thrive, and in the environment of labor force issues, and it's very difficult, not just veterinarians, but it's difficult to, you know, it's, get teams together, right? There are a lot of jobs out there for people, and there's a lot of choice for those employees to go to a lot of different places. And so I feel like you really have to be thinking about what can I do to provide a work environment that somebody wants to be in and they want to stay there. My understanding, and we heard Matt Saloy talk about this at the panel at WVC, the labor issues are not going to go away anytime soon. If you look at the demographics of the world or the United States and the baby boomers moving on to retirement. And so we all, one of the biggest threats is to just sit back and say, you know, I'm just going to put the same old ad out for an employee, or, you know, I'm just going to keep plugging along with, you know, without embracing technology and how not only employees, but consumers want to do business. We've got to meet, once again, go back to meet them where they're at and what drives a consumer. So as veterinarians, we want to just say, okay, we're the veterinarian, people will come to us. We have to be looking at consumer trends and what the consumer wants. The 80s, 70s, 60s are gone. And we need to be looking at what is the business world, the labor market, the economics of today, and how do we stay relevant?
Yeah, we live in a world of just infinite choice now, right? Like, I mean, anything you can think of that you could ever want, it's available to you. And there's a whole bunch of companies trying to put it in front of you and tell you about it and whatever it might be. There's just infinite choice on everything. So breaking through the noise is so, so important. And that does require staying in tune with what all that is and putting in the work to continue to change and evolve as the stuff, you know, moves.
And one of the things that veterinarians, I think, over the years have been very good at, and I think it's going to serve us well going forward, is building those personal relationships with clients. That has not changed. people want to build those personal relationships. They need to feel trust. They need to feel that somebody truly cares. And veterinarians have been very good at that. And so we really need to keep that as the core of what we do. But there's a lot around that, again, in the business world that and the economics of the profession that we need to be thinking about.
Yeah. Yeah. Real authenticity. I love that. Well, so that's certainly a great point and perspective on the threats. Let's talk about my favorite of the three topics here. What are the opportunities? Where do you really think the opportunities lie for practice owners right now, this year, take some sort of action that's going to really, truly benefit them? You know, what are the unique opportunities?
So I feel like I'm probably a broken record because I think threats, we need to turn them into opportunities, right? Or when there's challenges, that's where we have opportunity. We just have to think differently than how we were thinking before. And again, the opportunities are the technology. Holy cow, what's out there that can make our lives so much better? We have a pretty well-informed public, right? All you have to do is get on your phone. And in veterinary medicine, honestly, I found I would say the majority of my clients would come in with pretty good information. Now, there's, again, I won't deny that there's a lot of crappy information out there, but they did come in with some pretty good information. So we have really informed people walking in the door. They know that this clinical sign they see could be this disease, and that may be where they're focusing, but they're already informed about probably got to get some blood work, probably got to get some testing, probably need, some treatment for this. So I feel like they're super informed. I remember early in my career, people would come in with a problem, no idea what's going on. And of course, we look at the animal, do our, testing, whatever was needed. And they were in complete shock that an animal could even have diabetes or, a tooth abscess or, all these normal things that, as veterinarians, we think are just pretty, pretty everyday diseases. People were just shocked. And I think today, I don't think people walk in like that. They walk in with already some knowledge about what's going on. And to me, that's an opportunity because I think they're already, many times they're already in a mode that, hey, I kind of halfway know what's going on and my veterinarian's going to help me, get to the finish line or get to the next step where we need to be. So technology, I think the public's really well informed. And again, back to, there's really a strong demand. We have a very strong human-animal bond with society today. And people really have a strong desire to take care of their animals, do the right thing. And they want good veterinary care.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Absolutely. What do you think the industry, if you're going to pull out your crystal ball, because you've had this great unique perspective and insights and, from the positions you've had and everything, mere experience, what do you think the industry looks like for independent practice owners in the next 5 to 10 years?
So I'm kind of already seeing it because, again, at the bigger meetings, I get to talk to a lot of people and we're seeing really innovative business models like cooperatives and these business models that can create teams coming together. I think we need to think of flexibility in our workplaces. What does that look like? One of the reasons veterinarians are shifting to relief work right now is because of the flexibility that provides them. So how do we pull them back into the fold of, independent practices and being regular part of independent practices, but provide that flexibility, right? When I got into practice, you worked Monday through Saturday, and then you were on call on weekends, and that's just what you did. There was no other option. I mean, we did have a cooperative with our other with other clinics in our city so that we were on call every weekend. But what are those innovative ways that we can job share and create flexible schedules using, team-based approach so that we are not just left out there doing everything by ourselves. So anyway, I just think there's some some really smart people out there that will continue to look at really neat business models and use the technology. I think I'm like you, I was not usually the first adopter of technology, but I was watching it really close because I wanted to see how it came out or the new product. I wanted it to be out just a little bit before I jumped in, get some of the kinks worked out. But I think we have some really smart, innovative people that are not afraid to use technology and incorporate that. And so that's pretty exciting to me.
Yeah, I love it. You know, I've gone much more the direction that you're talking about over the past decade. I'm either, if I'm not the one creating the new thing or have a hand in somehow pushing a new thought or idea or thing forward, then I don't mind seeing it get tested on some others before jumping in and knowing that it's not just going to waste my time. But you know, being on the front end and creating it, that's a whole different thing.
Right.
Hey, you know, let me, before you go, because I know we're getting close on time here and you've been so generous with your time. I thank you so much. Do you have any, you know, programs or initiatives you want to make sure veterinarians and people know about right now that you think are important moving the industry forward, things you've been working on or, you know, just know about?
So we haven't talked a lot. We talked a little bit about it, but one of the things with the, tight labor market right now, retention of our important staff is just critical. And building that culture within a workplace starts from the top. And so AVMA has a lot of resources. We have our workplace well-being modules on Axon, AVMA Axon. We have Journey for Teams, which is an amazing tool in order to build that inclusive environment and help recognize different cultural differences. Again, back to meeting people where they're at, making them feel included and belong, you know, like that sense of belonging, so they want to stay in your practice. So there's a ton of things around building that culture that can be so helpful, particularly for independent businesses, because you're constantly looking for those resources to help you as an individual. Another thing that I think is important is reputation management. We launched a year ago or so a reputation management toolkit. So as good as we are, sometimes that social media storm just happens and you really need some help, you know, in the moment to figure out what do I do when I'm getting blasted on social media. So there's, for AVMA members, there is our reputation toolkit management. Jumping into a whole nother world of mentorship. I think mentorship is so important. We have amazing, super smart new graduates, but there's a bridge from academia and getting out of school into practice. And it is so important to figure out what that looks like. And that's definitely a two-way street. The new doctor has to kind of drive that mentorship as well as, you know, support and leadership from, you know, from the mentor in the practice. So we have Mentor Vet Connect on avma.com avma.org. I don't know why I said that. So that's another really important resource because, again, it's not easy to hire a veterinarian right now. And new grads are an amazing resource to really help build somebody's career. And competing in that world, I think it's important to help understand there may be these huge signing bonuses and reasons why new graduates are drawn to certain jobs. But it's important to really convey what that first couple of years in practice, that's investing in your entire future. And so I feel like if we can help them have a really strong first couple of years, that sets them up for success for their entire career instead of a really crappy or, you know, marginal first couple of years and then jumping around to different jobs, trying to find, you know, where they really can thrive. So I think conveying that is super important and really working on that mentorship piece for our new grads and setting them up for success, for long-term success, not just that immediate gratification of a big signing bonus. So lots and lots of things. I could go on and on and on about all the resources with AVMA, but I just recommend everybody go to avma.org and start poking around, see what's out there for them.
It's amazing. People just don't realize all the stuff that's actually just sitting there and it's available in the programs and all the stuff that they're looking for help and probably a lot of really great solutions to challenges that they're currently, you know, wading through, and they're right there for you. So I think that's great advice. Everybody go check out avma.org, poke around, look at the programs. Is there a good resource there if people, they kind of know what they're looking for, but they're not great at navigating and, you know, maybe finding and navigating websites and finding all the little niches and everything like that. There's a good chat on there, someone they can reach out to, help them navigate the programs.
There's definitely contact us. If you log into avma.org, you actually can go into the membership part and find who your local leaders are. And they're going to know a lot about what's happening at AVMA and maybe direct somebody as well. So AVMA, we collaborate with all of our state organizations, and we have two delegates from every state. We have two delegates from every allied organization, as well as the board of directors. And so if you go on there and look at membership and your volunteer leaders, you will find that person that is in your state and is there to help you, you know, as a veterinarian. And they're going to be pretty knowledgeable about all of the resources. And if they don't necessarily know, they're going to know the person to direct you to. So absolutely.
That's fantastic. Well, any parting words of advice?
I just want to say I'm really excited about the future. Once again, I think we've got some really super smart, innovative people that are working hard. We have some super smart future colleagues in our veterinary schools right now. And I think they're going to meet the challenges. I don't think we should ignore the challenges, but I really think we need to see ourselves in a really positive light moving forward, see ourselves as professionals who really are compassionate. Our motivation is to help people and animals, sift through all the negative stuff that we see out there and focus on how we can help. It's one of the things I always tried to talk to my staff about. Yes, here's a barrier, here's a problem, but stop and think, what can I do right now? What can I do? Don't stop and think about all the things I can't do. What can I do right now? And I think if we have that attitude as a profession, we're gonna continue to thrive.
I love it. I love it. Thank you so much for coming today, for sitting down, for sharing some of your wisdom, answering our questions. And just, it's really obvious that you have had an amazing career through this industry, seeing so much, navigating different positions, sharing that perspective is very, very valuable. So thanks so much, Dr. Carlson.
Absolutely. It's been delightful talking with you, David. Really appreciate you.
Sure thing. All right. Well, I look forward to seeing you again at the next conference, wherever that may be. And for all of you that have joined us here, stay tuned. We got a really important message for you.
It's no secret that the past 2 years have been a roller coaster ride for veterinary practice owners. But the truth is, right now is the greatest opportunity of your lifetime to grow and strengthen your veterinary practice for years to come. Business goes in cycles. These cycles have peaks and valleys. Right now we're at a peak, but at some point, there will be a valley. Smart and successful business owners find a way to build a bridge to get from peak to peak so that they never have to climb out of a valley. Now is the time for you to build your bridge. What is that bridge? It's an investment. Investing in your operations, in getting your staff well aligned, and in delivering a higher level of customer service. Are you looking to attract doctors and staff? Do you want to make it easier than ever to deliver a higher level of customer service, to attract clients that are ready and willing to follow your advice and will happily pay whatever you charge? The key to all of this is truly understanding the processes people go through leading up to, during, and after their interactions with your practice. How do doctors and staff find and evaluate you before applying? What is the complete customer journey for your clients? And how can your practice better support these people in every step they take? knowing the answers to these questions and implementing strategies to support them can be transformational to your veterinary practice, leading to increased workplace satisfaction, happier clients, and significantly higher profit margins. Genius Vets has proven to be an industry leader in helping veterinary practice owners take their businesses to the next level in all of these ways and more. Genius Vets offers many incredibly valuable resources that can help you grow and strengthen your veterinary practice that are completely free of charge, along with professional services that strongly outperform every other company in their space. If you've not yet scheduled your free consultation and demo with Genius Vets, we would strongly recommend that you do so now. It might be one of the best things you do for your business this year.